This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Definitely not handling lefties. I don't know, we had said homer, and our other hit against them was because the shortstop slipped. So, you know, you're trying to rely on your right-handed guys to have good at-bats against them. I thought our at-bats last year against them were okay. You know, Rutschman went deep, Mateo went deep. We hit some balls hard against them. Tonight, just I thought we had two biggest swings, didn't take our walks. It was a tough night for us offensively, a lot of punch-outs.
That was Brandon Hyde expressing frustration over the weekend. Orioles lose 2-3 to the Reds, including a 24-2 game on Sunday. And quite frankly, the starting pitching wasn't good in any of those games, even though they did beat Hunter Green on Saturday. It's the 9-12 Orioles and the 9-13 Nationals tonight. Pregame coverage, Baltimore Baseball Night, boarding the bone at 5:30. And so, assuming this thing continues to go in this direction, and with the starting pitching they have, quite frankly, it's very possible it could continue going this direction. How soon before something significant changes or happens with this baseball team?
If they keep playing at the winning percentage that they're at, or probably more to the point, the losing percentage that they've put up so far this year and even going back to July 1st last year, I think Brandon Hyde gets fired in early June. People talk about you know, Memorial Day, and in this industry, that's looked at as the first real barometer for, okay, we're pretty deep into this season now. It's not the biggest sample size in the world, but teams are really starting to tell you who they are. And if teams are carrying the same warts that railroaded a season that looked to be as promising as any in the last 40 years of this organization, and it completely torpedoed last year in the second half, and those same things are now not just continuing, but they're multiplied. And they're exacerbated by a terrible offseason in which the GM peed on his leg. The GM is not firing himself before somebody. So he's not taking that first bullet. And I don't believe that this young, and by young I mean inexperienced, naive, and not really knowing what they're doing yet, ownership group, not age, but they're young and naive when it comes to running a major league franchise of any sort.
Yeah,
of any sort. Not even just bait love, of any sort. I don't think they're, and they didn't hire these guys in the first place. And Elias spends, you know, a lot of time working them and telling them what he believes, right? We've had you've never really seen the owner come out and say, this is what I like, these are the tenets of Brandon Hyde, and this is what I believe about Brandon Hyde. But he can tell you, boy, Mike Elias showed me this, Mike Elias showed me that, Mike Elias has me believe in this, Mike Elias has me believe in that. So I don't think he's going to realize that really Mike Elias is the problem, and Brandon Hyde is just a functionary, you know, of Mike Elias. So I think that could happen. I think the Charlie Morton experiment could be over by June. I think David Robertson could be here to try to be that second closer to Felix. If it's pretty clear a month from now that Felix is still good, but not the dominant force he was, and he's still feeling through some things, I think that all of a sudden the GM might go to the owner and say, yeah, all that money I told you to keep in your pocket this offseason, how about giving me a little something now? I think those sort of things can happen. Now, do I think that's going to be enough to turn the tide? No. Do I think Robinson Chirinos or Buck Britton is going to get these guys to play with more fight and desire? Do I think that's going to get them to grow up and be more mature in their individual and collective approach? No. I mean, I think it'll get their attention, but I don't see Mike Elias taking nearly the level of culpability in this that's required, given his fingerprints are all over it more than anybody else. I don't think this ownership group's going to be willing to blow the whole thing up, even though I think they should. And I also don't think Mike Elias is going to be as forthright if this is a pig. I think he'd rather put lipstick on the pig rather than start selling the parts of the pig off that aren't going to be here next year ASAP. But I think by July, it's going to be pretty clear that he should be that Mountie and Seti and Sanchez and O'Neill.
How about Eflin?
And Eflin. Everybody should be out in that window being shopped to contenders, real contenders.
Yeah, if things continue to go this way and it's around the trade deadline, you have to. And do I think a move would happen around June and maybe it is Brandon Hyde? Sure, but the thing, it's what you said, Jason. It's not going to change anything. This lineup is what it is right now, and they still don't walk. They still don't hit in the clutch. They still do not run. They still struggle when trailing. They're still the second worst team in terms of OPS against left-handed pitching when you went out and tried to augment the roster to improve in that area. And I haven't even gotten to the starting rotation yet, which is in complete shambles right now.
That's the biggest issue. Their starting rotation stinks. And it's not like there's no – who do you have confidence in this rotation right now and for it to even tread water at the moment? But it is the GM handbook. If things are going sideways a little bit, you fire the manager.
Yeah, and Brandon Hyde will be the scapegoat, but yeah. Brandon Hyde didn't assemble the starting rotation that opposing batters are hitting 312 off of. 312 batting average. That's embarrassing.
Oh, it's a joke. A lot of this team is a joke. They're not fundamentally sound. They have low IQ on the base pass. They have low IQ in the field. They can't maintain the type of approach and focus necessary to have selfless, sacrificial at-bats. They don't excel at finding different ways to score. There's nothing creative about what they do. They are a slow pitch softball team.
But maybe I'm the idiot, but I can see a pathway to where they hit better. I can't see a pathway to where they pitch better. It's just not there.
I mean, could they hit better? Yeah. Like, do I think they're going to have a 250 slug against lefties all year? I don't think so. Like, I don't think that's in the cards. But do I think they're going to hit like they did game one through the Yankee series last year? I don't. I think that's the anomaly. I think that was lightning in a bottle. That was as good as it was going to get. And you could tell me, well, Sed wasn't hitting then, and he wasn't, but he was starting to hit at home against righties. Like, I think that was the last great ride for them unbridled before things got real. And before they started to understand that they were the hunted and not the hunter anymore. And then they started, you know, there's promos for them and they started being on prime time all the time. We started getting bigger crowds. I chronicled. They play like crap when there's people in the stadium. I mean, 28-30 regular season and playoffs since 2023 when there's 30,000 people or more at Camden Yards. I think that's where the faults in their structure and even beyond the analytics just – the not having the right mix of people, of athletes, of hitting profiles, of different types. They completely missed the plot there. And now I similarly don't think they're going to handle the fact that things are torpedoing in the wrong direction. I don't think they have the wherewithal within their group individually or collectively to buck that trend themselves. We saw months of last year where they couldn't get it right. I'm not inclined to think it'll change. So people lose their jobs for that, and Hyde should be fired. But the reality is, so should Mike Elias.
Orioles and Nationals start a three-game series tonight. Baltimore Baseball tonight, boarding the bone at 5:30, and we'll hit the hot corner next. We have the lineup, and we'll preview this series. Remember, we'll talk NFL Draft with Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network at 4:30 here on the
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Train to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Train to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd turn him loose. What the heck? You're up by a run.
Oh.
Uh-oh. Good Lord. Are you kidding me?
Oh, no, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wait. James Wood.
How many other guys in baseball are doing that? Seriously?
Dude.
Huh?
Dude. Come on now. That's 400.
On a string.
Against the traffic.
FanDuel Sports Network on the call. James Wood hitting one of his seven home runs already this year. He's got seven homers, 17 RBIs, only hitting .232. But it seems like every single
nobody
one of his home runs.
Nobody cares about batting average.
I do. Yeah. So that's
how much
not nobody.
Is, how much does he get on base?
I know, but I care about batting average.
Okay. Well,
I care about batting
average. He gets
on base
34% of the time. Go find how many Baltimore Orioles are doing that.
Not many, but he's only hitting .230.
Nobody cares.
I do. So that means
he's
by definition you're wrong.
He's got a slug of .861. He's a 20-year-old kid. If Jackson Holliday was doing what James Wood was doing, you would be doing a segment on it every day. You would be doing cartwheels and backflips. If he was going opposite field 420+ all the time.
Just like I pointed out a year ago that Anthony Santander was only hitting .200, I'm going to point out that this guy only hitting .230. It's important to me.
Okay. He's slugging .524.
That's great, and I'll point
like
that out too. But he's hitting .230.
And he's got nobody in the lineup. He's in a lineup full of mooks.
You're focusing on the one negative. I was talking all positive except for the batting average.
Is it even a negative? If you're getting on base 34% of the time,
I think .230
is a negative. Who cares how he gets on base?
I do. But alas, he's really good.
The reason he's got a .232 is because he's the only guy who hits the ball hard on that team. So he's got to swing for the fences because that's the only way they score runs.
Nathaniel Lowe's hitting .295.
Yeah.
Gilbert Ruiz hitting .305.
Gilbert Ruiz had a really good start. Go look at what he's done in the last 2 weeks.
That's a long season.
James, if you let James Wood beat you, whether he's batting first, second, third, or fourth, shame on you. This kid is a Maryland kid. He's the real deal. He was one of the main pieces in the Juan Soto trade, and he and Mackenzie Gore are paying massive dividends to the Nats right now. Mackenzie Gore leading the majors in strikeouts, I believe. C.J. Abrams is I think he's a good player. He's scuffling a little bit now, but still an .874 OPS is nothing to frown about. I will tell you this. This is a young athletic team. They don't get on base that much, but I bet they challenge Sanchez and Adley every chance. I don't know that Dylan Cruz can get on base, but if you hit him or you walk him, he's going to try to steal second, and he'll probably try to steal third. Like, they know who they are. But, yeah, look, Josh Bell, I think he's toast. Lowe's a professional hitter. Ruiz had an amazing start to the season. I still think there's a lot of holes in his swing. There's a lot of guys in this lineup who have swing and miss, and they're not a very good baseball team. But if you let I'm just telling you, James Wood, I really enjoy watching him play baseball.
He's leading off for them.
Well, the key against the Nats is to get to the bullpen because it's got awful.
Bad.
It's dead last in ERA, 7.19 ERA, despite pitching the second fewest innings by relievers, 30th in bullpen whip at a 1.79.
Yeah, I mean, look, that this is a team that the Orioles need to take 2 out of 3 from. But we know, look, Mitchell Parker tonight has the exact profile of everything that gives them nightmares.
Yes.
So, like, he's not going to beat you with velo. He's not going to try to beat you with velo. He's going to beat you with a pitch mix and a little bit of deception from the left side. He's not going to try to be something he's not. And can they find the right collection of 9 hitters to finally do something against a softer tossing lefty? I don't know. Maybe tonight is a night they break through. But he's going to be tough. Now, tomorrow night, you know, that. What is it, Williams? I mean, you should be able to get after him a little bit. And then I'm just looking Thursday. Do they have to face Gore in this series?
I don't believe so.
That's a huge win if you don't have to face McKenzie.
Yeah, Gore's starting game 3.
Povich against Gore game 3.
Yeah.
So, like, can you do anything against the lefty tonight? If you don't, then you might not win this series.
Interesting lineup. Mullins leads off in center field. Adley's the DH batting second. Gunnar Henderson is the shortstop batting third. Ryan Mountcastle batting fourth at first base. Tyler O'Neill, he's in right field batting fifth. Heston Kerstad in left field batting sixth. Jordan Westberg is at third base batting seventh. Gary Sanchez batting eighth at catcher. And Jackson Holliday batting ninth at second base. So the lefties are playing against a lefty.
Well, again, the way they've been doing it, 184 average, 256 on base, 253 slug, 512 OPS against lefties to this point with 53 Ks and 174 at-bats. Hey, the Wizards and the Warlocks are finally ready to try something else.
Yeah, when you're 29th in OPS, why don't you try something different against lefties?
Draft is 2 days away. What are the Ravens going to do? We're going to ask NFL Network's Cynthia Freeland next here on The Fan. Incredibly, the NFL draft is just 2 days away. Let's talk some NFL football in the draft as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline with our friend from NFL Network, Cynthia Freeland. And Cynthia, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So obviously, I'm not going to ask you who the Ravens are going to take at 27, but educated guess, what do you think they're looking for position-wise in the first round?
I'm thinking defense, or potentially, I guess, offensive line, depending on exactly what falls where, but I'm thinking probably a defensive front player. This is a really strong D-line class. It's really quirky with how the top of the draft will shake out. So a lot of things, I mean, availability of positions are going to be really interesting. 27, you know, you just have to be really flexible, which, by the way, if there's any team that I would trust to be that way, it's the Ravens.
Who are some of the kids who could go, you know, let's say like top 50-ish type kids? Are there some that you really like, or do you have some dudes that you kind of, your model just really seems to favor and you think they might, you know, far outproduce where they're actually, you know, end up being drafted?
Absolutely. I mean, I will say, I don't know if I can stomach talking about any of the guys at the top anymore. So
sure.
They're all wonderful.
Yes.
They're great. But because this draft class is being like regarded as not as strong as in the past, we've been talking about them even more. So love them over all of them. So I'm looking at some of the guys who are a little bit kind of lower, like the Walter Nolans of the world, the defensive tackle.
Yep.
This guy is electric, really fun to watch on film. I mean, his name is Walter, and he's a young man. It's just funny to me. I don't know why, but I just like that.
Yep.
But I like him. I like Donovan Ezeraku, the edge rusher from Boston College, who had 16.5 sacks last season. I'm a big fan of this corner class. I think there's going to be some really smart corners. Like, even Maxwell Hairston, who's likely a second-round pick, he could be really interesting. Same with Benjamin Morrison, the corner out of Notre Dame, who unfortunately was dealing with some injuries last season, so he didn't get a full season. So, you know, it's interesting to see if he's, I guess, presumably fully healthy. He would have been an easy first rounder. But now, because there's some questions about his health, he probably falls to second, and he would be an amazing value.
Cynthia, how surprised are you that all 32 teams still have their original pick? Are you expecting fireworks on Thursday, or maybe continued calmness?
I mean, it's weird because some of the reasons, so like there's two things going on. The first is that, you know, we don't have the overwhelming belief that this is a strong quarterback class, which would be a position that more people would be clamoring to get right in years past. We saw that last year, for sure, setting a record with 6 taken in the top 12. Got it. Now, I think the interesting part here that we don't talk about as much is that the change in the way that the fifth-year option works doesn't really give you as big of an advantage anymore. So you're not going to trade up. Sure, you would do it for the top five positions, but if you like someone, you could go up and get them. However, in this class, if you like a defensive lineman, you probably feel like, well, I can get a second one that's almost as good or maybe better than I could have done in last year's draft. So why would I trade up and give anything away when I could take more picks later?
Talking with Cynthia Freeland, Inside Access here on the Fan. We pretty much know Cam Ward's going one. The quarterbacks right. that follow, what do you like Shedeur Sanders? Do you like Jackson Dart? Where are you on Jalen Milroe?
I'm a little less. My Jalen Milroe projection is the most shaky. So the way that I see it is Shedeur will be taken second and Jackson Dart third. Now, some people disagree. I'm hearing this last-minute push for Jackson Dart. He seems to be kind of a polarizing player around the league. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's some – like he's got interesting data. They both have some great accuracy notes. You know, Shedeur was under so much pressure in college that it's really hard to tell what his absolute upside is because he was never throwing from a clean pocket. So that's an interesting note there. But he definitely didn't have a lot of turnover-worthy plays, which is good. And he was good at creating with his legs, also good, projects well at the next level. But I guess it's really hard to see a ceiling. You know, the one that I think could be interesting and old man river here is Tyler Shuck out of Louisville, who kind of really nailed the combine and draft process. He's an older player. Like, he's ancient. He's 25 years old, which I guess is kind of old for this process. But, you know, the interesting part about him is he had some injury concerns a couple of years ago. But at Louisville last year, if you clock who had the strongest arm, who threw the hardest, fastest deep ball, it was actually Tyler Shuck of anyone in this class. So, you know, if you paired him in the right spot, kind of like more of a Bo Nix, maybe he could be like, you know, he's not the same type of player, but, you know, Sean Payton had a real vision for Bo Nix, thus bringing him more towards the optimal outcome for him as opposed to the other. That could be an interesting one for a team a little bit later, and that could be an outperform in terms of where he's drafted.
In terms of the edge group, I'm wondering what you think of Shamar Stewart. Some evaluators I'm really close to love this kid, and some who even bend a little more analytically love him, despite the fact that, you know, he almost never sacked a quarterback. In college, I've become sort of convinced that he could even be in play for Carolina at 8, but maybe that's some of the biases based on who I've talked to. How do you stack those kids up, and where do you see him?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just depending on what you already have and which traits you want to select for, mm-hmm. right? I think Shamar Stewart's a really interesting case study because he kind of reminds me of the stock market right now, right? It could go really high up or really down low because we don't have the resume that points us in a direction of a clear trajectory. He just didn't have the opportunity. These are one of the casualties of the way the transfer portal is working in general. It's like none of these organizations now, the college organizations, can play deep into the playbook. Therefore, they're just kind of putting everything they can out as early as possible. And he has such great traits. Why not just like use him for what he's got? Because right. you know, these every year you're rolling the dice as to who's on your team. So guys like that, we're just going to have to be comfortable with a little more volatility in the projection. But it's a good projection. It's just there's also downside in there too.
Cynthia, last year was a big year for running backs. Ashton Jeanty is going to go very early on in the draft on Thursday. How good do you think he'll be out of the gate?
Well, I hate comps because it's crazy because you remember most of the league players don't even last 4 years. So it's like, okay, but you know, he does have a trajectory and in the vein of LaDainian Tomlinson, am I going to call him a gold jacket guy from the jump? Absolutely not. I wouldn't want to put that kid under that kind of pressure. But I do think in terms of stylistically, that's the mold that he falls under. And his like upside could be absolutely incredible. He's also a high character guy. I have heard absolutely nothing about him in this whole process that hasn't been a glowing review of what he would bring to the locker room. And also, I just watch what happens when he takes direct contact, meaning when hips are square to each other. You know, obviously if someone hits you from the side, you can get around it a little bit easier. But if you're square, this guy, he's just like, whoop, gotta go, see you later, like gets right by him. There's no like even hesitation with it. He's really great with, you know, taking contact and creating after it.
Cynthia, is there anybody that you like more than most and maybe someone that you don't like as much as most people do?
So I'll start first with the one I don't like as much as most people do, and it's Abdul Carter, who I know is he is the best one in terms of the edge rushers. But I hate the fact that because he wore number 11 and went to Penn State, that people are like, he's Micah Parsons 2.0. Mm. He's not. He has 1 year of production at the college level that would substantiate that. It's not to say he couldn't become it, but I don't think right now where he is the same thing as before. We'd have one or two like real elite guys and then a drop off. This year, we have a lot of guys who are like 8s, 9s, 10s out of 10, right? But not like some guy who's like, whoa, that's a generational talent. So I just think we need to give Abdul Carter a little bit of a moment to enter the league and become who he is and not have to already jump into the standards of being, you know, Micah Parsons 2.0 and, you know, for his own sake. So maybe I'm a little lower on him than some. And then, you know, the one that I really like maybe more than most is I think Will Johnson. I don't think he gets past 20, 25, maybe, mm-hmm. like depends with him trades. I feel like some of the evaluators I've spoken to were like, you know, we don't really know if he's going to be as great in man concepts as he is in zone because he has some great zone kind of notes. By the way, he was also a wide receiver in high school and his dad won 3 Big Ten titles. So he's like, you know, it's very on trend this year to be like a two-way athlete, a multi-sport athlete, and have a dad that was also an athlete. Just, you know, keeping with the trends there. But my favorite part about Will Johnson's game is if you look to see and you measure where he starts versus where the ball is, he takes the shortest path to the ball at a very, very high rate. And that's something that forecasts for success at the next level. And I talked to a bunch of defensive coordinators and people who are defensive back coaches at like the highest level, obviously NFL, but like good NFL teams. I'm like, can he learn it? Can he not? Have you interviewed him? What do you think from him? And they're like, we think he can play, man. He just doesn't have, his resume doesn't show it as much as some of the other guys.
Cynthia Freeland, thank you as always for your time. I can't believe the draft is here. Enjoy the weekend.
Let's go. I mean, no breeze in Green Bay.
Enjoy it.
Enjoy. You can handle that. Detroit, come on.
Yeah, I've gotten soft in my old age. You know, I'm soft.
We believe in you.
Yeah, thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Coming up next, we'll get back to Tyler Linderbaum and what he had to say when he spoke to the media yesterday. Plus, look at what offensive linemen are realistic options for the Ravens if they stay at 27. That's next here on The Fan. Ravens are 2 days away from the NFL draft, and Bone mentioned earlier Eric DaCosta bragging about how they have less money allotted to their offensive line than any of the team in football. One of those offensive linemen is Tyler Linderbaum, who is he's eligible for a contract extension. And he was asked yesterday when he met with the media if he's talked about his contract.
No conversations yet, and you know, let my agent handle that. You know, I'm just focused on just becoming as good of a football player as I can be for this team. Just coming in here every day and put my best foot forward and let all the other things take care of itself.
So
that was a lot of cliches.
Yeah.
Well, that was straight out of Bull Durham right there.
Yeah.
He was coached up by Crash Davis, I think, on those.
You might say all world cliches.
All world cliches.
Yeah.
Or not. Or just really kind of regular ones.
By an all world center.
Yeah, our world.
It'll come out in the wash.
So
we'll see the contract.
We'll see if they do sign him. He says he hasn't heard anything. Cam Jurgens getting a massive deal with almost $40 million guaranteed would help his cause if the Ravens want to go down that road. But let's look at pick 27, Jason. And when you look at the draft, there's some tackles and some interior offensive linemen that could be available. I've looked at multiple mocks. I saw a couple that had Josh Connerly Jr. from Oregon. Mm-hmm. The Ravens taking him. And I've seen a couple that have had Tyler Booker, the guard from Alabama, going to the Ravens.
Yeah, I think Connerly will be there. I'm not sure about Booker. I think Gray Zabel will be there. He's someone who's been mocked as high as the mid-teens by some people. Daniel Jeremiah was really banging his drum coming out of the Senior Bowl. I don't know that he'll have him quite as high when he does his final mock. But he's somebody who could be an immediate sort of interior offensive line player for them. I am just wondering if they, because they have a predilection for this, when they're picking that low and they have this many picks and they love the day two kids, they've said it. They gush more about the day two kids than the day one kids. And if the defensive side of the ball is picked through, would they take a flyer on Josh Simmons and say, it's not ideal that the kid got hurt in October and it might be something of a redshirt year. And those redshirt years haven't always worked out well for them. But this is a kid who had top 10 potential in this draft before he got hurt, and someone who size, body type, the ability to get to the second level to do some of the things that they want their offensive lineman to do. You know, he's someone who they know if he doesn't get hurt, they never get their hands on. And because of the way the Ronnie Stanley deal is structured, and because Rosengarten could play either side, could this kid be a short-term swing tackle, a guy who at some point in the year is at least up for you in an emergency? And could he be the heir apparent for Ronnie Stanley? I could see Andy Reid doing it. I could see Howie Roseman doing it at the end of the first round. Maybe nobody takes him in the first round. And maybe there's only five offensive linemen who go in the first round. And maybe the Ravens take a wide receiver instead, or they just trade out if somebody wants to come up and do anything.
Get a quarterback, maybe.
Quarterback or a running back or something else, whatever. But offensive line could make sense. If it was me, I would, and I'm going offensive line, and they're more privy to Ronnie Stanley's medicals than we are, and they think Ronnie Stanley's got at least one more good season in him. Then if I'm picking an offensive lineman that low and they've already been picked through, then I want a guy who has the if we get him to his ceiling, he could be as good as the second, third guy off the board. And I want to get that at 27. So I would lean into the Simmons proposition rather than taking somebody who projects to be a replacement level guard.
They've done this a couple of times recently with David Ajabo in the second round. They did with Andrew Voorhees trading back in the draft to get him. I just wonder if they would do that with their first pick. I just, heading into this year where you're trying to get over the hump, you're trying to do things differently, you want to get someone that's going to give you an impact day one, where I don't know if that's going to be the case with him, but it still would not surprise me if they take an offensive lineman early in this draft.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people that seem to think if the draft goes a certain way, that kid Booker from Alabama is like, they've said he looks like a Raven, whatever the hell that means. But I've heard that multiple times.
Yeah, I look at teams like Houston and Minnesota that have such an acute need for some offensive line. I mean, those are playoff teams that need guys who can start right now. I don't know that he gets past that part of the draft, but maybe he does.
I always said that your team drafting an offensive lineman in the first round is kind of like getting socks for Christmas. You need socks, nobody gets excited about socks at Christmas.
Yeah, but they don't all hit.
No, they don't.
Go look at go look at Greer in Miami and the offensive lineman he's drafting.
Not all good socks.
They're not all good socks.
You're not getting Nike and Under Armour.
No. Sometimes you get that. What's that website now? You can
Fruit of the Loom.
Yeah, well, Fruit of the Loom's decent. Well, that's quality. Yeah, that's quality. That's true. Like that knockoff brand stuff you can get online. It's
off brand stuff.
Yeah, like off brand. You want to go to like the.
You don't want the ones where the big toe shoots.
A lot of times you can get by without socks. So I don't know.
I'm getting by with it today.
You raw dog your shoes?
I'm flops.
Right now?
I'm flops.
I don't like
flops. That. It's flop weather.
Oh, flops are a different story.
Vans? Vans are a different story.
I wear without socks.
Socks with Vans.
That's right.
I don't like shoes without socks. Nah. Flops are different.
But what about boat shoes?
I wear shoes without socks a lot.
I still socks.
No,
socks.
You got to wear boat
You're
shoes.
Too old for boat shoes. Yeah. Don't wear boat shoes.
Okay. I wear boat shoes. I got Olakais. They're nice. They wear without socks. They're good shoes. Hey, coming up next.
Bowling shoes. I would never wear bowling shoes without socks.
No, I don't think they allow it. I think that's against the law. I think you get arrested for that.
It's against the law to have your dog off a leash.
Yes.
Man, good luck walking around in Towson without seeing that. Okay. Every single bleeping day.
That's why I don't walk around in Towson.
Smart move.
Coming up next, we preview Orioles-Nats from the Nats perspective as Mark Zuckerman covers the Nats for Mass, and he joins us next.